Welcome to the Teacher Nerds Podcast. Joe and Ron are self-proclaimed teacher nerds, geeking out on all things education. They are looking to move educational practices out of the 1900s factory worker model to a student-driven classroom full of empathetic, creative, and collaborative students willing to take risks. Join them as they chat with educators from around the world, discussing educational tools, techniques, ideas, policies, and much more. Thank you for listening and becoming one of the Teacher Nerds. And now a word from a sponsor. In this episode of the Teacher Nerds Podcast, Joe and Ron chat with Ari Mamar and Esther Wojcicki, co-founders of Tract, an amazing new platform where students can learn, teach, and even fulfill that desire to be the next TikTok or YouTube star, all in a safe learning environment. Let's get into the show.
Oh, have you heard about the nerds? What's the word? Teacher nerds. You can tweet them out on Twitter. You can find them on the gram. After listening to their podcast, you'd be sitting there like, bam! Trying to take the teaching from one level to the next. Reaching up to Canada and down to Mexico. Gotta go. Teacher nerds. Start the show.
Welcome back to another episode of the Teacher Nerds Podcast. I'm Ron Nober.
I'm Joe DiPaolo.
I am a technology teacher for third grade to eighth grade.
And I'm currently teaching third grade.
And today we have our guests from Tract, Ari Mamar and Esther Wojcicki. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Excited to be here.
Esther, did I butcher that again?
No, you did a perfect job. I was really impressed.
All right. Oh, good. All right. I thought I saw your face, and I guess it was that you were.
I was waiting. It was the waiting face.
Good. We're so excited to have you here, and you know, we just started using Tract in our district. I did a PD on it, and I know Joe started it in his classroom. So we're excited to spread the Tract word and Tract love.
That's so great. Thank you. We really love it.
Yeah. So we're going to jump into our icebreaker to kind of get everybody loosened up. And today we're going to be focusing on ways to be creative.
It's time for two, yes, more, one, no way.
I'm going to start us off. For me, my outlets for being creative, my two yeses. One is sitting and editing the podcast. It's one of those things that takes time. You know, an hour podcast probably takes about 3 hours or 2.5 hours to edit, but it's just like a zen moment where you kind of get into the flow and time just passes. And the other is doing like the graphic design work for the podcast, like all the graphics that we do and stuff. Really, you know, again, you lose all sense of time and just get into the flow of things. So they're my two yeses. My one no is, and I apologize to anybody out there, is gardening. It is just, I don't know. I grew up in the city. Maybe that's it. We didn't have any gardening. It was, if you went out and mowed the lawn or anything like that, it was cutting weeds with a pair of scissors out of the crack. That's my no. So I know a lot of people like it. And it's funny now, I live on 2 acres out in the country on a dirt road, but gardening is not my thing. All right, Ari, what about you? Ways to be creative?
Well, I just gravitate towards music. Like, I was in a high school band. I rapped when I was in high school, though. Thank goodness that's not published anywhere on the internet right now. And today, you know, I love dancing. I do like Latin dance, bachata. I like DJing, do like kind of finding other songs or melodies or beats that others have created and kind of mixing them together. So music is definitely my number one. My number two is probably reading. Like, if you let me, I would just read sci-fi. Like, that's all I would do. But I know that I can't just keep doing that. I got to like read some history and learn about some people. So I try to mix it up, but I find that like a lot of my ideas or like creative potential just comes from like reading about others that have been even more creative than me and have invented things. And so I find that kind of broadens my own horizons quite a bit. In terms of the no, that's really tough. because I feel like I'm a very creative person, but I guess I'd have to go with cooking. And the reason why I'd say that is like, I'm like a very pragmatic person when it comes to food. I'm like, no foo-foo, no decoration. Like, does it taste good? Like, is it delivered hot? And I'm good with that. And I just don't think I have the patience to like really artistically like create the food. I mean, I can enjoy it, but if you triple plate it and put like a fancy napkin on it, it kind of turns me off a little bit in a weird way.
I like the, is it delivered hot? It's a high bar. All right, Esther, what about you?
Oh, well, thank you for asking. Well, my number one thing, I'm obsessed, I'm sorry to say this, with technology. I love tech and I find it really engaging and I spend a lot of time doing it and I'm up till like midnight, as Ari knows, and I'm like doing something new on tech all the time. So I don't know what happened because in my generation, nobody else I know is obsessed with tech. And the second thing that I love is dancing. I love dancing and I'm a wild dancer. And I just went to Mexico and I danced like crazy. It was so fun, I can tell you.
Now, Ari, did you know that about Esther before this?
I did know she likes the dance, but I didn't realize we overlapped in the types of genres we like dancing because I like Latin music too. So I didn't know that.
Oh my God. It was incredible. They took a video of me, but I won't share it, but they never know. And here's the crazy thing of what I don't like. I'm not a movie watcher.
Wow.
Can you believe that? Yeah. I don't watch movies. I watch just a few. And here's a super crazy thing. I went to the Oscars. Oh, my daughter took me. And then I sat next to some very famous actors and she said to me, Mom, don't ask them what they do. I tried to behave myself. But anyway, so that's what I do.
Joe?
I like that there are two guests, Ron, are focusing on music.
I know you do.
You know, because and this was really tough for me because I have a lot of creative outlets, but I figure if I had to pick my top one would probably be surfing. I know there's just something about that being on the wave and listen, the disclaimer's out now. I teach third grade because I'm not a good surfer. I mean, you know, like I surf because I really enjoy it. And it's what I think keeps bringing me back. I might get, if I'm lucky, 10 seconds on one wave. So there's so much I'm trying to do in 10 seconds. And, you know, number one, it's catching the wave. And I just think it's I don't know, once you get up, it's no matter what you want to do, this wave is going to do what it wants to do. You know, it's just, it's doing its thing. And you have to be able to get in the right spot and to keep in the right spot. I mean, there is so much going on. So I think that's my top. And then my second kind of involves everything everyone else said. Ron, like I love editing the videos of, you know, that I either take surfing or videos of the podcast. And when I get to edit my surf videos, it's really great because like that's where I get to bring in music. And I learned first and foremost when I did my first video and put all these cool Beastie Boys songs in there and threw it up on YouTube. I got the email in like within 30 seconds, it violated copyright. So then I'm like, all right, well, as someone who plays drums or not drums, well, I'm starting to play drums because I chopped my finger off making a surfboard. So like I stopped my guitar playing, but I wrote and played the score and probably three or four songs in my first video. And it was great because then when I shared that out and started to talk to people about it, what they liked most was the songs. And I thought that's where everyone was going to rip me apart because I'm not a good guitar player. Like I didn't think I was a good guitar player. I didn't think I was a good singer. And the first song I wrote was, I entitled it Ship Bottom because all the waves were based in the town of Ship Bottom and people freaking loved it. So like, it was just really cool to see the creativity come out and, you know, it took a lot of guts to throw it out there on the World Wide Web, but yeah. I want to know what people thought about it. So that was like really cool. And just the opportunity to bring all those ideas and just the creative fun into it. Yeah. My no way would have to probably be test taking.
Test take. Yep.
Well, that doesn't count. That's not creative at all.
Well, then here's my question. Why are people still given tests in school when we want these kids to think creatively and outside the box? I know. I'm kind of being a smartass. Like, because I hate taking tests. And I do. I remember instead of for a paper, I handed in a podcast for a master's class on instructional technology. And the teacher ripped me apart. She said, where do you get the gall to hand in a podcast when you're supposed, you know? And I just replied, listen, I thought this was instructional technology. Here's the paper I wrote that I was all my notes. So then she, you know, she ended up apologizing. Now, this was like 10 years ago. So hopefully a lot's changed. But I thought that was a good segue into the show about all creativity.
Definitely was.
Yeah, a little cheeky. But like, I feel like there's so many ways to be creative and show that you might have learned something, whether it being music or an interpretive dance or editing your own video or podcast on something. I feel like there's a whole plethora of ways out there. And then to gear it towards what you're into, holy smokes, like you talk about the hook to get to kids. So I don't know, Ron, I didn't know if you had to segue into it, but
no, that was it. If you didn't do it, I was going to call it the segue. So,
well, that's, you know what, on the way home, because the past 3 days, I'm like, what's my no way? Like, I don't think I have a no way. I suck at gardening, but I'll be out there gardening all day. And I'm not the greatest cook, but I'll cook and play around with it. Like I don't know. There's other than having to sit down and take a test or write a standard paper. I feel like anything I can do to bring out, I guess it's like when you're creative, it's like a little bit of your spirit, right? Like you get to see the inside. So whatever I can do to put me into it, I'm all for it. And I don't think a multiple choice test is the way to go and be creative. Unless
I agree,
you know, unless you're taking those bubbles and not really making answering. Out
of them. Oh, turning them into pixel art.
Yep. There's creativity.
And now we're going to take a little break, but we'll be back in a moment.
Many of today's students aspire to be the next TikTok or YouTube star, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. Successful and professional creators have a solid foundation of essential skills like communication, creativity, and critical thinking, to name a few. But learning these essential skills has been easier said than done until now. Introducing TRACT. TRACT has intertwined project-based learning's best practices with content conventions from TikTok, Snapchat, and YouTube to create a fun, educational experience to empower students to become creators on TRACT. By developing their own learning path on TRACT, students of every level have the opportunity to select a topic of interest and create a dynamic learning experience through a series of project-based learning activities designed to help them become effective creators. From researching and outlining to scripting, recording, editing, and presenting to their peers, your students can develop 21st century skills employers are looking for most by creating their own class on TRACT. And with built-in awards and a clear path to becoming a paid creator, teachers can easily motivate students to turn their YouTube and TikTok star aspirations into reality by being a published paid partner on TRACT. TRACT has even thought of safety. TRACT is COPPA, FERPA, and CCPA compliant, and uses a three-tiered approach to moderation: verified adult account holders only, technology detection and blocking, and human moderation. Best of all, TRACT is free forever for teachers who sign up at teach.tract.app and use the access code TEACHERNERDS. And remember, that's nerds with a Z. Sign up for TRACT now.
And now back to the show.
So that was definitely a good segue into TRACT.
I thought so.
So would you all want to tell us just a little bit about your journey in education and I guess maybe the connection that you two have, because that kind of starts your journey in education?
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty unconventional for a company to start from a teacher and their former student. And that's kind of where this story starts. Esther was my high school teacher at Palo Alto High School for 3 years. That class was a media class. So I took beginning journalism, and then I was a part of the school newspaper for 2 years. Pretty much everyone in the school went into the media program, and we were all attracted to the media program because of really three things. One, kids were running it. Sorry to say, it wasn't because of Esther personally. It was because like there was some really cool older kids running it, and Esther was the enabler of those really cool older kids. And secondarily, they're like you said, like all of the proofs of learning were the artifacts we were making. So whether they were videos or articles, we were creating them and then we were sharing them. And it was really fun. It didn't really feel like school. And oftentimes during, you know, the production cycle, we'd be at, you know, at school till like 10 p.m. and we'd just be hanging out and like creating stuff. And it was fun. What I didn't really realize through that process, though, was like that was kind of the beginning of the creator economy. You know, it didn't really have a name. There weren't really all these creator platforms out there, but really at its incipient stage, like the media program was a space for kids to be creative and be creators. And it was also, more importantly, creators of substance. Like people were researching and writing things and creating things that were fact-based and well thought out and peer reviewed. And so there was something really special there. I then went on and kind of did what a lot of people at 17, 18 years old do. They're good at math, so they go into engineering or some technical field. They go to four-year college. They take a job at the place that will pay them. You work there for a little bit. And, you know, I worked at ExxonMobil for 5 years. Then I went and worked at Uber for 5 years. Kind of was feeling these like Ender's Game moments of like, I've worked so hard my entire life here. And then like all of a sudden someone makes some decision and like you feel a little bit empty. You know, why did I, you know, spend all my energy here? And you reach a point, you kind of think like, what is it that's going to give me my own energy? And I, you know, started thinking like, what is it? And I went back to my first job as a art and science camp counselor, like never felt more satisfied than working with kids and generating these fun creative projects. And I went back to my time in Esther's class, like being able to work on all these really fun projects. And that led me back to Esther, who obviously keeps in touch with all these students. I don't know how she does it. I feel like every day she's meeting with a former student for lunch or coffee or something, which is super unconventional, by the way. I'm not really doing that with any other teachers, but that experience of kind of reconnecting with Esther, you know, talking with her a bit more and more about like, hey, like I've had this internal calling of like, I want to work with kids. And I believe your pedagogy and the way you went about things directly translates to what's going on in the creator economy and how kids want to be creators. And they want to be YouTubers and TikTokers. And like, can we just channel that into something productive? And can we share your pedagogy with more and more people, with more and more teachers and parents and kids? And then we, you know, started Track together with that goal. Like, how can we help kids learn, create, share, and teach each other? How can we help develop them into these creators of substance? How can we make them, you know, love learning and channel their creativity and curiosity into these productive channels versus these destructive channels of consumerism or low self-worth? And hopefully, you know, through that experience, kids leave feeling, most importantly, good about themselves, feeling that they're good at something, that they're talented at something, that they have a supportive community around them, and they have a lot of potential. Like they need to realize that. And so hopefully we can help them realize that. So yeah, that's a little background on me and starting Track. Esther's intro may take like a 5-part HBO series, but do you want to give it a shot?
Oh, no. Do you really want to have, maybe I should just add a little, a Cliff Notes version.
Yeah, go. Maybe the trailer.
Yeah, do a trailer for a part two.
So I guess one of the things that's kind of interesting that I never talk about is that when I was in elementary school, I got into trouble all the time, nonstop. And the main reason was because I finished my work early and then I would help my friends. And then I got into trouble for it. They would paddle me for it. Back in those days, it was okay to hit kids. And at one point, the teacher was so frustrated with me, she put me under her desk for a whole day. Oh, can you believe that? This was like in third grade or fourth grade or something like that. And I remember thinking as a child, when I grow up, I'm going to make education fun for kids. I'm going to make it so that everybody gets an opportunity to work together with their friends. Because all my friends loved it because then they learned all the stuff that I apparently already knew. And so I was helping them. So, you know, I didn't think about that until just recently when somebody asked me a question. And then I realized that was probably the origin of the whole thing. And then as a teacher in a classroom, you know, I started teaching in 1984. And when I first started teaching, you know, you're taught in the school of education that it's lecture, 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 and everybody has to obey. No talking while you're talking. They take notes, then they do a test, and then the interaction is minimal. And I thought after, I'm not kidding, it was about 6 or 7 months, I was like, this is not going to work for me. I'm so bored. And guess who else is bored? Oops, looks like all those kids are bored. So I was like, I'm not going to do it. So I changed it around. This was 1984, you guys. You probably were still in school. Let me tell you, I got into terrible trouble. They were like, kids working together, it's cheating. You're letting your whole class cheat. This is ridiculous. And I didn't even know what to do about it. You know, I was like, oh my God, what am I going to do? I already set up this pattern. So I confessed to the kids that they were going to fire me because they were talking to each other. So the next time the principal came into the class, could they just say nothing? Be quiet. Look at your desk. Look at your book. Look at whatever. But don't talk. Anyway, you won't believe it. They all obeyed. They just loved doing it. And they came back and watched me 2 or 3 times. And every time it was really quiet. And then they wanted to know, what did you do to the kids? You don't think I told them, do you? I didn't say why. But then anyway, as time went on, you know, then I got tenure. So then I could do more of what I wanted. And then in 2002, I got California Teacher of the Year. That really helped me a lot because suddenly it was like, oh my God, maybe she's doing something that really matters. I mean, class by that time had grown from 20 to 100. So they might have figured out there was something in there that I was doing that worked. So that was really the beginning of the whole thing. And then every 2 years from 2000 to 2012, I started another program. So we have about 10 magazines and we have television, and maybe it was more than every 2 years. We have radio, we have podcasting, we have graphic design, we have new movies. And it was all because kids had things that they wanted to do, and they would make a presentation. And they're like, we need to have this kind of a program. And I was like, well, why don't we try that? And at that point, the administration was very supportive because they kept winning awards. There's nothing like an award for an administrator. Nothing. So I just want to tell all the teachers out there, those awards, they work. So that's sort of my history. And then I met Ari in 2006. Or no, 2004, probably.
2007. Yeah.
And yeah. At that point, you know, the program was already pretty big. And I had already instituted this thing where I was taking about 52 kids once a year to New York City for a week. And that was, oh my God, I loved it. It was so much fun. It was crazy, the stuff we were doing. But it was implementing the policy I had, which was really to empower those kids. When you go to New York, I want you to know how to get around yourself. Can you imagine? I bought them all one of those passes, day and night, free pass on the subway and the bus, as much as you want. Yep, they all got one. So anyway, I just want you to know, after 16 years of doing this, I had to stop because of, you know why? Peanut allergy. You know, there were too many kids with nut allergies. And so I couldn't control all the nut allergies. I had to carry EpiPens for every kid. It was a little off the charts. So I decided this is enough. But anyway, it was a wonderful trip.
LA? You guys were in California and you went to New York for a week?
Yeah, we were.
Yes.
San Francisco. Yeah, we were in Palo Alto. Yeah, we went to New York for a week. I don't know how Esther did it. I was on the subway, went to like check out Rucker Park and like the basketball scene, and then went to like some like Broadway shows, and like, yeah, I mean, it was crazy as a, you know, 16, 17 year old, but you felt like on top of the world.
Yeah. It was great. I loved it, you know, and all the parents would arrive at the airport to pick up their kids, and they're like, want to make sure my kid's there. Oh, you see? Right. You didn't lose them, did she? No. I didn't lose a single kid in 16 years. But I want you to know.
It was kind of like free. It was definitely before the surveillance state of like parents these days sometimes, you know? So like at the time, it wasn't like you could really see where your kids were. So you just kind of were like, oh, they're in New York. They're fine. Now you'd probably freak out.
Yeah. Anyway, that's a little bit about my background. I have a lot of stories. So I just have... If you want to do another podcast, we'll do more stories.
I would say 16 years of taking kids from San Francisco area to New York, you got to have story. Like, there's a book, movie, something
in there. A whole book there, I can tell you.
There could be a movie just on what you saw on the subway after.
Yeah.
I was going to say after 10 o'clock, but it doesn't even have to be when the sun's down. That subway. No. You see things all hours of the day on the subway.
Oh. I was going to say, you see things on Philadelphia subways where we're close to. I can't even imagine what New York's got going on.
That was wild.
So can you, for our listeners, tell us what is Tract?
So Tract is an online community for kids to teach kids. So for teachers, whether you're using it for instructional time and you want to apply a project-based fun, like media creation component, where a kid can either create a lesson teaching about a certain topic, maybe you're learning about World War II events or people, and your kids can teach about it instead of write a 5-paragraph essay or take a multiple choice test. Or they can learn about that topic by watching lessons from another student and completing projects and activities that have been created by that other student. So typically we see younger kids kind of more in the learner persona where they're learning from other kids, and then older kids, you know, upper primary, intermediate, into secondary, kind of more in the teacher persona, doing those, you know, inquiry-based research projects and sharing their video lessons. Or my favorite, which I hope more and more teachers start doing, is kind of more the passion-based learning or genius hour, kind of 20% time, whatever you like to call it. And in those cases, same kind of thing. You know, your kids can have a structured approach for their research, their media creation, and they're teaching about what they've learned, or they're learning in a safe environment and creating projects on all sorts of different topics that maybe they've just heard of or never even heard of, like new technologies, like coding, like the arts, like nature. And so it's a really great option for those that are looking for a little bit more support and are like, you know, I'm not an expert in the 25 things my kids are interested in, and I want to support them. Well, you can support them through Tract, because we've got experts in our community on pretty much everything that can work with your kids. And we've got this medium in the form of video creation that is kind of agnostic to whatever your kids are interested in. So it works really nice as a mechanism to show what you've learned. And as we know, every single kid wants to be a YouTube, TikTok creator. So instead of cringing every time you hear it, you can say, that's great. Like, here's something you can do with that motivation. Like, let's learn the digital art skills. Let's learn like the video editing skills. Let's learn the research skills. Let's learn how to be a great teacher and communicator and be charismatic. And so there's a lot of opportunity there that you can channel.
And I think that's the one thing, you know, when I found out about Tract, it was like the, you know, like angels started singing and like rays of sun hit me. And, you know, because it was, I have been saying for years, I want my students to, they all love to consume content, create some, like, I want you to be creative and create content. You all have ideas. And all right, like you said, they want to be YouTubers or TikTokers. And, you know, obviously we can't have, or our school anyway, they can't create their own YouTube channel, and especially can't do that in third grade, or shouldn't be, aren't supposed to be doing that in third grade. It, you know, so this gives that whole ability to them, and just, it was everything that I was looking for. The key was for me that it was safe. And
I can definitely talk to that, Ron, because we've been using it for about a week, and the kids are, you know, as soon as we got into it, we have a couple kids that have been creating content, and we show them the videos, and then we show them the opportunity you can make. You guys refer to them as the paths, I think, right? Where they can teach about a topic.
Yep.
And they're like, oh, I want to do this. I want to create something. I said, listen, we don't even know what this platform's like. We don't know what they're expecting. And it was from Ron's suggestion to let them do a couple first to see, you know, walk through it, see what they're expecting. Or what's expected of them. And anytime something's created, you know, it's okay, because what's the girl's name, Ari?
Bree, one of our main moderators.
Yes.
Yeah.
As you know, checking everything, where this is like that safe place for a learning environment.
Yeah.
And not only, you know, can you feel comfortable posting videos, but I think you could feel comfortable even as a parent knowing, even if your son or daughter posts something, they're not going to get attacked on there because it is being monitored.
Anytime you're dealing with kids' products, like, everything needs to be 100% moderated. And so what you just described, it, to me, feels like normal, and probably to you seems like a normal expectation, but in our current environment actually is like quite uncommon, right? The kids are on all these places online, like proliferation of all these unmoderated places, and there's adult content there. There's very non-productive conversations there. There's very mean people there. And a lot of times I think because the kids are already there, we may not all know it, but like they are already there. They sometimes build these patterns where they think there's no accountability and they can say things. And now a lot of kids, you know, may not want to share their work, and that's totally fine. They can keep their work private. But one thing I have found is most kids do want to share their work, and most kids who put in the effort, the worst possible thing you could do is like a kid has spent so much effort and really created something special that's like deserves to be shared and deserves recognition. And then the only person who sees it is like their teacher or their parent, or maybe their class sees it for like a second. And then maybe people are mean and like don't really like recognize what they've done. So for me, it's so, so important that when someone puts in the effort and someone, like you said, had the bravery to like, you put your own surf video out there, has the bravery to share, that they can be guaranteed that the response is going to be positive and constructive, and they can be guaranteed that they will be appreciated and recognized for that work. And actually that work may end up being an inspiration for others and maybe a beacon for someone else who's like, wow, like you can do that. Maybe I can do it. So I think that's a super important nuance as well, where you want to promote sharing, but you want to make sure everything's safe. And so how can you strike that balance? And we've tried to do it by committing to 100% moderation and kind of having, you know, a walled garden, and then having, you know, configurability where you can opt into sharing or not sharing.
And you all have all the, I mean, I know you, all the acronyms, the FERPA and all, you know, there's
yeah.
Education love.
Yeah, we've got that. Yeah, we've got the alphabet soup in terms of privacy and legal compliance here. Yeah, COPPA, FERPA, CCPA, SOPA. I could keep going, but that's not going to be a very fun conversation.
But I do, you know, for those teachers out there who are wondering, like, oh, this is going online, but it's education. It's all good for anybody who wants to jump in. So we talked about it, you know, maybe being for, like you said, a project, and, you know, it doesn't have to be for that just subject matter, and it can be for that 20% time. I've used it both ways and found it really good. Like I've used it as I've assigned specific paths for students to take based on a subject we were learning about. We were talking about plastic pollution and the ocean, and it was great. I mean, because the one thing I really did like was I set up two paths that they needed to do, and students could work at their own pace to do them, which was fantastic. And it got other students, when they finished both paths, said, oh, I want to create a path on plastic pollution and something that I didn't see in that path that I want to now create. And Joe and I in Media Club just had a student who is, you know, relatively shy, but she's fifth grade and has already created two of her own paths, you know, and thrown them out there, and is creating the challenges. And I think that's the other thing, the thought that has to go into the creating the path, the content you're going to film. What are your challenges going to be? You know, there's a lot there. They're coming up with their own basic assessment. I mean,
we see that all the time, where like someone create something and it's kind of this ripple effect of all of these people getting excited about that topic or wanting to, you know, share through a different lens. And yeah, I think that's super natural. And I think a lot of times, you know, kids do react that way. And exactly to your point, in terms of how we've thought about the design of the process of creating, I mean, for one, we know we don't want it to be a consumption platform. And we know that like engagement for the sake of watch time is not like productive for anybody. So we've tried to ensure that like, if you are teaching something, well, teaching it is the highest form of understanding, but for your learner, for your student, like what do you want them to do so they've learned what you've taught them? And so that takes, you know, that's not a model kids are necessarily like naturally like know. So it is something we, you know, help teach them, but it's also a lot more of an active experience where it's not so much about viewing for the sake of watching, you're viewing for the sake of being inspired, for hearing a story, for seeing an example, for getting the instructions you need. And it's less so for like just pure entertainment. Like obviously we want to make it entertaining, and the kids are naturally going to make it entertaining, but there's a bit more to why you need to watch something.
And could you talk a little bit about, like, I know you have this creation of the paths, you know, could you discuss a little more about there's the levels that students can get to in creating the paths?
Yeah. So we call it a learning path. And then of course we shorten it and call it a path because it just like sounds a little bit better and we want to make it sound less school-like. But basically a path is a combination of videos teaching something and then challenges or activities that accompany it. And so it's kind of like you went through this learning path yourself and now you're like sharing it. So you've kind of like paved the path. And then tracked is an area of indefinite expanse. You can kind of explore it filled with paths. So you get the kind of like double, double entendre. I don't think that's the right word, but some sibling of that. And in the case of the creator tiers, the way we've thought about it is like, okay, you have some kids and they've never created video or they've never taught anything, but they want to. Like they want to be that YouTube, TikTok creator, but they've never done it before. And that's actually way more common than you'd think. So despite, you know, kids from 6 to 17 years old wanting to be creators, a lot of them have never created. They've just been consumers. So for that person who is just starting and maybe never created before, the expectations for you are lower. It's like, can you teach something through video? And if you can, you can get published to your class locally, to your school locally, and you will earn the creator status. And that status really indicates that you have successfully taught something and created something, and it's something that you should be proud of, and it's an achievement. Now, as you get higher and higher in our status tier system, which we've tried to mirror like the Twitch system in terms of what they call it, because that's like what all the kids know, like affiliate, partner, like they just have brand equity in those names and they're always talking about it and adding them in their like, you know, their own channels. Like I'm an affiliate, I'm a partner. Like, you know, give me this one more sub, one more like to like get to affiliate partner. So we tried to keep the same terminology since yeah. It's like the equity has been built in that terminology. But in our mind, what we're really saying is if you are to become an affiliate or a partner, what that means is you have a larger platform. You are going to be teaching more kids. Mm-hmm. So the expectation for you to teach more kids is going to be higher because more and more people are going to be learning from you. So that means the media you create is going to be held to a higher standard. That means the research you do is going to be held to a higher standard. That means your charisma and your ability to teach is going to be held to a higher standard. And we do that across, you know, successive steps. So it doesn't feel like you're asking an 8-year-old to create like a Mr. Beast quality video. Like that's not practical. But we also dissect the elements of the Mr. Beast video. And we also dissect the elements of Esther's pedagogy. And we structure it in very easy to follow conventions for these kids that are spending more time and progressing. And we deliver that through the application so they can see it in line when they're creating. And we also deliver it through personalized feedback because the application and like watching resources is great, but everybody's circumstance is different. Everybody's situation is different. So you really can't beat personalized feedback from a mentor or coach. And because our community is full of incredible young leaders who want to help kids, it kind of works perfectly because you can learn from someone who's just a little bit ahead of you and get feedback on the skill areas you need to improve. And being a creator is a multi-skill thing. So some people may be like so talented at like art, which is what they're teaching. So like they're incredible artists, but maybe their charisma and how they teach it is not great. Or maybe their video editing needs some help. Or maybe their ability to kind of break down the instructions into something simple needs help. So there's different elements there. And it's really difficult for you to be really exceptional at all of them. So pretty much everybody has a development area. And you know, we can help each student in whatever their development areas are. And they also help themselves as they realize those development areas. So that's kind of our general structure. As you go to affiliate, you are visible across the network to all classrooms on Tract. And then as you move to partner, you can also get paid by Tract for the videos you create. And then through that process, we also give like equipment that can make better content for them. And then we also give them like t-shirts and other little perks.
Yeah. And Esther, I guess the PDFs that Tract has that I loved was you had a lesson plan on how to be a content creator and going through all of that, which I think, you know, as this episode, we're going to air this episode as a like a special bonus episode in May. It couldn't be a more better time to try something like this out at the end of the year when you are looking to get your kids to do something. Joe and I have a, you know, we have an episode every year called Don't Show a Movie at the end of the year, you know, and Esther's, that lesson plan would fit perfectly in there on how to be a content creator and research and do all that. So would you mind just, you know, talking just a little bit about the...
Oh, my theory is that when kids learn to teach and when they learn to be leaders, it impacts them forever. It's a very positive set of skills that they're learning. And learning how to, they can be CEOs, they can be leaders in all different industries. Those skills make a huge difference. And I'd love to see all kids in all classes make some kind of a learning path so that they feel empowered and they feel like they too can teach about things they're interested in. It can be about frogs. I don't care what they want to do, anything they want to do. And if I just take a look at the journalism, the newspaper, the magazines, the television, they came up with their ideas. I never told them what to do. Sometimes they came up with really strange ideas. I rarely said anything, to be honest. I just...
And that's step one. Picking an idea, exactly.
Yeah, step one. But some of those ideas were like really out there. But it was interesting for me to watch. I remember the first time it happened, I was like, oh my God, what am I going to do? But then I realized that when they talk to their friends and they sift through some of these ideas that are not as good as they should be, they come to the conclusion themselves that they should be modified, and they do it. And that is a sense of empowerment again. Nobody's telling me what to do. I personally can think through these things myself. And it's so important for kids to realize that revision is part of the game. Revision in all areas of life. You know, nobody writes the piece perfectly the first time. Not a New York Times writer, not a Time magazine, not an author. It's revision, everything. So I think that I'm so happy when I hear that kids are doing learning paths. I cannot tell you.
Yeah, and I was going to say that the sequence is nice. I mean, first of all, some kids, you try to put a little structure on them, like, no, thank you, no structure. And so we still, you know, support those kids like myself who would just rather go do it myself and kind of go through my own process. But a lot of kids benefit from the structure, and they benefit from the structure to Esther's point, because there's certain things you need to do along the way. You need to come up with the idea. You need to research your idea. You need to make the media. You need to like plan out how you're going to make the media. You need to get feedback. And these are kind of building block steps, no matter what, no matter what topic it is you're going to teach about. So I think that structure, you know, works really well, and it makes it easier for teachers because they can look at it and say, okay, well, I want you to get to this next point and then this next point. And it's not like trying to be an expert in 25 different topics that you know nothing about. It's more so like, did you get the feedback, or did you do the research? What did you find? And that's a way you can support everyone in a similar but personalized way. Obviously, each person's situation will be different, but they kind of go through similar motions.
And I think that's the one cool thing. Like, I think, Esther, you were saying you didn't tell anybody this was a bad idea, or this didn't shoot anything down, but they came to the conclusion on their own. And then you also open, when you have that collaboration, you open students up to realize like, oh, Joe might be an expert in video editing, so I need to go and touch base with Joe on this. And you know, this student is really good at writing the script. And so you build a sense of community then in your classroom as well, that everybody has a talent or a skill that can help benefit each other.
Exactly. Is awesome. That is absolutely true. And teachers that don't realize that, they might want to think again. Those little kids sitting there in front of you, they know a lot more than you would ever guess. And, you know, I just decided to trust them and give them that opportunity. And I was never disappointed. And all those, I taught for 40 years. So, you know, I never once had a bad year with that philosophy. Some kids need a little more pushing in one direction than another, of course. Sure. But the majority of the kids, did an absolutely amazing job. And
the math checks out, but it's a biological wonder you're staring at.
I'm like, wait a minute. If she started in 84 and she met you in like 2006, I'm like, wait, that's a lot of years. I'm going,
that's right.
94 is 10 years.
Oh, I'm not 94, but
no. Like 84 to 94. Yeah. I was counting by tens. Man. I'm like counting the years down. I'm like, holy smokes. If I can put in a couple more years, I can make it to this age. I could be, you know, going out and leaving teaching and trying to find the next thing in my life. And it's 15 years away from, wait, is it 15? Yeah, 25. 15 years away from 40 years. I don't know if I could do 40 years.
Well, I know I can. I didn't start teaching until I was 40. So I'm not teaching until I'm 8.
We'll give you 30 years.
Okay. All right. I can do that. I can do that.
Wait, that would mean you'd be 70? You would want to like, wow.
Why not?
Hey, you guys, that's another thing. I want you to know I failed at retirement. I don't believe it.
I could see how if I didn't have it. That's why I said like retire from teaching and find the next
yeah. thing.
Yeah. Right.
Yep. Well, teaching is more rewarding than really, I think is the most rewarding profession out there, because I get to work with everybody's pride and joy. And it's really a pleasure. Really, those kids, you know, they take care of them, they feed them and house them and give birth to them, and whatever. And I just get to play with them.
I don't have any children myself. But that's it. Like, that's what keeps me, I feel like young and like, on the cutting edge of things that are going on is my interaction with the third graders to eighth graders that I deal with.
That's right. Well, I mean, I think we're really lucky. I think more people should appreciate teachers, though. That's one of the things that I've been on a warpath about, is teachers really control the future. They can impact the next generation. And right. The way you teach them makes a big difference for the future. And that's why I'm so focused on track, because I think it's really an empowering tool for all kids and it helps teachers. So, I mean, it's a win-win.
Yeah. The way I teach kids makes me tired. I know I come home.
Then you're doing it right.
I am drained. I'm like,
well, use track more and just let the kids do it.
This is, you know? we do our 20% time is called spark time. Okay. And we give the kids opportunities. And I'm excited because I have kids. One little girl is focusing on how to become a better dancer. Another little boy is focusing on how to be better at playing guitar. We have another little boy and it's great because you talk about creating. He went to Canva and created design. He's into hippos and knows a whole bunch about hippos. So he's got a Canva for his podcast. He designed the logo for his podcast. And then we started talking today about setting his podcast up. And we found a couple cool podcasts for him to listen to get some ideas. But now I'm like, okay, so for the dancer girl, track's going to be a breeze. For the guitar player kid, track's going to be a breeze. I'm trying to think, how can I get this kid with hippos to create a path where, and I guess it's not me, but to get him to think about what challenges.
How to use Canva.
What's that?
How to use Canva.
Oh, but then what to do with his hippo information?
Well, once he can just teach people how to use Canva and then have his hippo dance around and give have the hippo create some kind of story for everyone.
Okay. Oh, yeah. See, and that's it. I mean, so what have we been using Tract for? What's it been, a week, Ron?
It's been a week, yeah.
Yeah. So I'm still... I'm still getting the ins and outs.
Yeah, we don't yet have a lesson plan for teachers on hippos, but no, that one in the
So the first
you never know.
The first 5 minutes, and maybe I should have been paying more attention. Yeah. But as soon as I got in when you were talking, he was the first one I thought of. I'm like, let me see what they have on hippos. But you know what?
Opening for him, right? Like
that's what I've just
said. Lesson on hippos and what do hippos eat and are they endangered and why are they endangered? And
maybe the hippos can tell a story.
Right. Well, and there's so like I'm now all these ideas are flowing and it's great because some of the kids, you know, like they love to follow along, and a lot of the kids are into drawing and they want to, you know, draw. Yeah. But then we have like one little girl, she draws dragons, she draws dinosaurs. And my hope is that that's where she'll start to go to be that creator. And this is a little girl who, that's why these kids are upsetting to me, because I give them the pretest, they get A's on it. And now all of a sudden I got to go find or create, you know, projects for them that will challenge them. But that's what I've learned. Yeah. To have them teach maybe something.
Let them teach something and then also let them pick their own projects to create.
Yeah.
Give them some time to do it. They'll do it in like 20 minutes.
The last math project was great because 3 out of the 4 kids, all they wanted to do was learn long division. I'm like, are you kidding me?
Let them do a learning path. How to do long division. Well,
so that's another 4. I know I have like 17 kids in class. I'm really starting to piece out, because we use it during our Spark time. And if it's, you know, if you don't have to get pulled to meet needs for reading or math, or you're not in the quote unquote, our what do you call it, Ron? Our education program, like for higher learners, we call it our STEP program. So if you didn't meet the criteria for that, you know, we have kids, and to get them the opportunity to be creative and to pick their own choice. And I mean, that's track's been a breeze, and it's great when Ron did the presentation, the principals were on board, the superintendent's on board. Yes. So it's nice when your admin appreciates the creativity aspect to everything.
Yeah. Remember how I said they love awards? Just wait. <Yep. laughs>
Well, and the thing is, like, track to every all those skills that come out every year of these are the skills that we're looking for in the careers.
Yeah.
All the top 10, that they're everything that track's about.
Like, that's absolutely true. You know, that's the goal.
Their rank in top 10 is changing here and there, but they're all those top 10 skills. Yep. That's it.
Yeah. I mean, I think we're in this transition to, you know, what people call a knowledge economy, and it's all about creativity. I mean, creativity is the skill. Obviously the other skills are important too, but, you know, with all of the routine work, you know, the rule following work kind of being automated or
in the economy, we need to make the transition, right? Like, we need to exercise the creativity muscle and really help enable kids to be as creative as possible, because that's what the job market is asking for.
Every year I give the speech that it doesn't matter what you know anymore, because everyone's got one of these. So
that's right.
Everyone's got everything right in their pocket. And I was like, so it doesn't matter what you know. What matters is, and what's going to set you apart, is what can you do with it? Like, what are you going to do with all that knowledge? And it's unreal when you give them that opportunity of the choice, what's the drive behind the work,
right?
The drive behind the work is there.
And I think, you know, as we're kind of coming to start to wrap up a little bit, I want to, the one thing that I found really exciting as well is Track's commitment to helping build empathy and the sustainable development goals through the prize board that you all have. That was, Joe and I are Teach SDG ambassadors. And, you know, just having that is amazing. And I just, I know you just put up a helping kids in the Ukraine as one of the prizes that the kids can spend some of their coins on. So would you just, if you mind, you know, just mention a little bit about that? Because it is.
Yeah. Thanks for mentioning that, because it's something that I'm personally very proud of as well. Unlike your school, I mean, you guys are incredible that you're teaching the UN SDGs. Like, I find that to be the exception more so than the rule around the world. But I think they're really important. And I think the UN SDGs are probably the best synthesis of like the most important world problems, right? So I think the earlier kids are exposed to them and learn about them, the more hungry they are to spend their time addressing these problems. And I really do think this generation, more so than even, you know, my generation, wants to leave the world in a better place and wants to help others in a more meaningful way than prior generations. So, you know, knowing that there's not necessarily that much time to go too deep into the UN SDGs and most curriculums, we thought a great way to expose kids is through these micro donations. And as kids are earning coins, which are a currency on Tract for, you know, the more you learn, the more you earn. They can opt personally to give back to different organizations. We have curated a list of organizations we partner with that tend to cover the full list of UN SDGs. And we've also picked organizations that specifically help kids. So when kids are giving back, they're giving back to, you know, help other kids. And, you know, it's not surprising, but the number one thing kids do with their coins is donate. You know, I guess at first I was a little bit surprised. I was like, I thought maybe they'd save it for themselves. But I think once that first kid in the first class donates and kind of shares about it, it's a bit infectious. And it ends up being even like dinner table conversation. Like, why did you choose to do that? Or what did you learn about that? And that just kind of stokes the fire of like, yes, there's a lot of people who are out there hungry. Or yes, there's a lot of people who don't have access to like clean water. And a lot of times those things may feel obvious, but you don't really know them until you talk about them. And so for me, that's a big part of that whole system is just exposing kids to these issues. And then a lot of kids actually start creating content around these issues too. They want to teach about it. They want to learn more about it. So it's a really elegant solution from my perspective of exposing kids to these issues. And the Ukraine one was new, obviously, like that, you know, with the current events unfolding, you know, we felt like it was appropriate to put something on there. So we added that one pretty quickly after, you know, vetting some different organizations that are helping there and then aligned to that thematic element of helping kids.
Yeah, it was awesome. And I loved the first day that a student came to me and said, as soon as I got my 500 coins, I donated to, like, that was his goal, was to get to donate. And that was somebody else today said to me, I didn't even know the UN or the Ukraine thing was on there. And they said, I'm just a few coins away from being able to donate to the Ukraine. So it is just awesome. Yeah. I just want to say thank you to both of you. For you know, taking the time with us and telling us about Tract. And if I think it's important to mention, it is tract.app when people are looking for it. So it's tract.app, tract.app, and it's app. And where else can people follow on social media for Tract?
Yeah, our social handle is Tract Learning. So Instagram, Twitter, those are kind of the main two areas. We are LinkedIn, I guess, for those that are on LinkedIn. But yeah, definitely check us out. Head over to Tract. It's free for educators. We don't even really talk about that much, but there's no cost. There's no risk. You have hyper personal support from me and my team. So if you liked hearing about this conversation, I'm sure we'll have many more conversations one-on-one with all your viewers and listeners. So yeah, definitely head to track.app and get started. And yeah, excited.
And I will say, I had during a PD session, we had people in the midst of the PD session reach out to Tract to get some things adjusted. And by the end of our PD session, which was an hour and a half, they were all fixed. So your support is absolutely amazing.
Thank you.
The free, like, there's no better word for a teacher than a program. That, we spend enough out of our pockets for other things. It is amazing.
We have an incredible team, and I do not have octopus arms. So it's 100% them.
But a lot of times that's the tough part, right? Like, you want to get on these programs or these platforms, yeah, and then you have to monitor every video. And it is nice to know that it's a safe environment. They can do it. They're going to be safe. And if they're not acting appropriately and you don't catch them, there are other eyes out there keeping everyone safe.
Yeah.
Yeah. We know it's not practical for teachers to moderate. So we moderate. And we also know that your time is better spent elsewhere. So we want to do that for you.
Yeah.
It's awesome. I'm so looking forward to more and more teachers getting on board and us continuing to use Tract. And, you know, again, can't thank you both enough for your time.
Well, thank you very much for inviting us. We're really excited to talk about it. And our goal is really to help support teachers as best we can and help support kids in the classroom.
Yeah, thanks for having us. This was a wonderful conversation, and thank you both for the work you guys are doing here. Your kiddos are very lucky to have you as teachers.
Wow, we definitely appreciate that.
teacher nerds, knocking on your door. Open up, let's take your teaching further than before. Give it a try, don't be shy, there's nothing there to lose. Worst thing that happens, kids get pain on their shoes. We're talking teacher nerds.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Teacher Nerds Podcast. Keep up with every new episode by subscribing on Apple Podcast, Spotify, Google Podcast, Anchor, or anywhere you listen. When you subscribe, be sure to give us a review and tell a friend. Visit us at teachernerds.com, follow us on Twitter at teachernerds, on Instagram at teachernerdspodcast, or email us teachernerds@gmail.com. And remember, we're nerds with a Z. Most importantly, thank you for listening and becoming one of the Teacher Nerds.